Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, February 9th, 2014. This is episode 1056. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, joins us in a little bit, too. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-826-5537. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside of that area, please, just don't hesitate. Use your Skype there and call me up. It won't cost a thing because it's a toll-free number you're calling. 888-827-5536. We talked yesterday about Flappy Bird, and I blame myself. I blame myself because the author, the creator of Flappy Bird, has declared that he is killing Flappy Bird as of tomorrow. If you haven't purchased it yet, get on out there and get it. His name is, I think, Dong Nguyen. And he created Flappy Bird. It's a solo effort. You've played it, right? Don't, if you haven't. Trust me, don't. Do not. It's highly addictive and highly stupid. So it kind of goes together. Dong Nguyen said, "I can't take it anymore," on the Twitter. It's still up there right now, though. So if you, and it's free. Story was, and I think this didn't come from the developer himself, but from people who did some math. It's, you know, it's free, but it's ad supported. They were estimating he was making $50,000 a day on Flappy Bird. It is very simple. It's an 8-bit presentation. You know, that means like Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, kind of blocky graphics. It's just a little bird here. I'll play it for you. You can hear it. All the Flappy Bird addicts will go crazy when they hear the sound. Like, ah, stop, I must play Flappy Bird. I think the sound's a big part of it. So you're this 8-bit bird, and you flap. Kind of, it reminds me of Joust. Remember that old game? Oh. So the sounds are flap, a ding when you go through a portal, and a whack, like you got slugged when you hit one. That's it. And you're just flying and trying to maintain through these little gates. The more gates you get, the higher your score. My high score is 3. But I have friends who have much higher scores. I'm looking at Paul Thurrott, who is he hosts a Windows show for the Twit Network called Windows Weekly. He's a writer, a blogger, so he has a lot of free time. He's also honed his skills over many years of Call of Duty. His WinSuperSite, SuperSite for Windows, is his website, WinSuperSite.com. Paul has managed through 118 portals. I've never seen anything like it. 118 portals. That's crazy. Most of you who are sensible have played the game and stopped. So this is stupid. This is enough. But enough of you haven't. That, 50 million downloads. Actually, I guess Nguyen himself said he was making $50,000 a day, but still, I don't know. You know, he could be. There was too much attention. It was too difficult. Somebody replied to his tweet, "Imagine if Mark Zuckerberg walked away from Facebook because it was hard." A radio DJ, Tin Gamboa, says, I'm annoyed. Now, I think it might be a marketing stunt, and that's what some people tweeted. Oh, yes, sure. Yeah, sure, he's going to take it down. That way, he'll get to 75 million downloads today. I don't know, you know? I mean, but I guess why take the chance? If you haven't played it, download Flappy Bird. It's on iOS, it's on iPhone, and it's on Android. And it's free, so why not, right? I think he'll be back. He says, I'm not selling it. I don't want it. I'm done. It's too much. It's too much work. You can follow him on Twitter, Dong, D-O-N-G, Nguyen, N-G-U-Y-E-N. His Twitter handle is at Dongatory. He says, and then he hasn't tweeted since. This was yesterday. I'm sorry, Flappy Bird users. He tweeted yesterday. 22 hours from now, I will take Flappy Bird down. I cannot take this anymore. Then he tweets, it's not anything related to legal issues. I just can't keep it anymore. Then he tweeted, I also don't sell Flappy Bird. Don't ask. And then he tweeted, and I still make games. And then he disappeared. I love it. Oh. We shall see what happens to Flappy Bird. I like it when the stories that we're covering, you know, are this, not... And once again, news that the National Security Agency is spying on you. There's plenty of that, too. Every once in a while, you got to have a little Flappy Bird fun. I love this. The Edward Snowden story doesn't die, partly because he and his cohorts in the press are releasing the documents bit by bit. But now, the NSA has released some information. They said... Hey, you know how he got all those highly classified documents? He used a commonly used shareware program, a web downloading site, to scrape all the data. He said, the official from the NSA said, we don't believe it was an individual sitting in a machine and downloading. It was quite automated. Yeah, he found it on download.com. That's security. Well, you know, they're probably blocking against a lot of really serious stuff, but they just forgot to think about, you know, a web page downloader. I guess Flappy Bird's gone. Is it gone? Oh, it's gone. It's gone. Flappy Bird is gone. If you search for Flappy, there's 8,000 clones. It's not that hard a game to clone. So immediately, people expecting, you know, Apple has the worst search on the iOS store. Immediately, people started creating clones. Here we go. Let's see. I searched for Flappy. I've got Fly Birdie, Flappy Bird Flyer, Flying Flappy Unicorn Bird, Magic Duck Unlimited, Smarkle Flyer. Some of these look exactly like Flappy Bird. Flappy Penguin, Flappy Turkey, Cute Tiny Birds. Free. There's a Flappy Bird that has sharks. It's called Shark. So don't worry, there's no Flappy Bird, but somehow we'll survive. Let's see if I'm just checking the iPhone store. Yeah, Flappy Bee, but no Flappy Bird. No Flappy Bird. Fluffy Birds? Sure. Flappy Plane. See, if you really have a Flappy Jones, there's plenty of Flappy things you can download from the Flap Store, App Store. No lack. No Android either. I'm sorry, I should have told you sooner. I apologize. How long before he's back? Flappy Bird 2. And if you've already downloaded it once, you can re-download it. If you downloaded it, deleted in frustration and pain, are you trying to get it? Is that what you're doing, Heather? Get off your phone. We've got work to do. Can you imagine how many hours of wasted productivity are due to this one game? People, I mean, I look at the scores of my team here. Len Rubenstein, 48. Now, he didn't get those 48 Flappy Bird points. just while doing work. He was Josh Windisch. How many do you have, Josh? Patrick Delahanty. Yeah, I see your score. 8888. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, and I just wasted my first segment on it. I oughta. The rain has come to California, which is an awesome thing indeed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's the phone number if you want to call with a question, a comment, suggestion. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, will answer the call, put you on the phone, prepare you, groom you for a fine appearance. Heather Hammond, she's kind of like J-Lo on American Idol. She says yes to everyone.
Oh, my.
Did you know that about J-Lo? She can't,
I don't watch that show.
She can't say no.
Oh, wow.
Person can be singing like this. And she goes, yes. Oh. I'm going to give you a chance. Yes.
Well, that's sweet.
Yeah. She has too big of a heart for that show. Bring back Simon Cowell. That man had no heart.
Yeah.
That's what you need. Why am I talking about this when I have a call on the line? Would you tell me who to talk to here? Whoa, wait a minute. Why does it say tiger on your back?
It's a tiger.
It's a tiger.
Someone was asking about it, so I just thought I'd show
She's got a tiger in her tank.
So, yeah, speaking of grooming, I've straightened Dave in Chicago's tie, and he's all ready for you.
Dave, you're looking marvelous. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I am well. I hear you fine.
Oh, great. We got the new hands-free law in Illinois, so I just got my phone sitting on my shoulder.
Yeah. No noise. Sounds wonderful. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I want to install a USB 3.0 card on my desktop.
You know what? There is no noise. It's true. It's dead silent when you're not talking. The quality of your voice is terrible, but there is no noise. It works.
Well, how's that?
No, I'm just teasing you. Do you want to install what on your desktop? A graphics card?
I want to install a USB 3.0 card.
Oh, a USB 3. Okay.
And reading like a Newegg and stuff, they talk about PCI Express slots 2.0 and 1.0.
Yeah.
And I've only got, my motherboard has a 2.0 and a couple of 1.0s.
That's fine.
Well, and my video card is in my...
Yeah. Yeah, generally, you PCI Express was invented for video cards, for graphics cards originally, to give them more throughput. What's happening, though, is these drives are getting faster, especially SSDs. USB is 3 is faster. So sometimes they'll put SSDs on the PCI Express bus. Sometimes they'll put USB 3 on it. But the truth is, it's not so fast that PCI Express 1 is fine. What are you going to hook? What kind of drives are you hooking up to it?
I want to hook up another external drive.
Yeah, unless you're doing a solid state, really fast drive or really fast drive array, that's fine.
So I'll still get the 3.0 transfer rates with the 1.0 PCI Express?
Ah, that's an interesting question. So 3.0 goes as high as 5 gigabits. Yeah, I don't know. Now, as high as doesn't mean it will. PCI Express. Let's see what PCI Express 1.0 goes to. That's a single channel PCI Express. I think you're going to be fine. I really do. I can't imagine. First of all, it's 5 gigabits. You're not going to see that much from the hard drive. So,
right.
A single lane PCI is 250 megabytes per second. But you can send and receive at the same time. It's full duplex. So I think that that's more than fast enough for that USB drive.
Okay, because I did see on one card, they specifically said to achieve the 3.0 speed, you do need the 2.0 PC Express. But anyway,
well, that's true if the thing on the other end of the USB is that fast. But the hard drive isn't 5 gigabits per second.
Sure. Okay.
So I think you're going to be just fine. You're not going to see any difference.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it, frankly, because you don't want to waste a faster slot on USB 3. Zach in Los Angeles. Leo, I'm sorry, not Zach. Zach, you're next. Brad in San Jose. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It's great talking to you. I love the show.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
So I'm planning my next computer build, and I'm thinking of using a Samsung 840 EVO solid-state drive for the system drive.
Yeah.
And I'm currently a Windows 7 user, but I was going to use 8.1 on the new computer. And I've been reading about eDrive encryption, and I was wondering, what are your thoughts about Windows 8 eDrive?
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, it's fine. Good, it's good encryption. You're going to be fine on it. And I'm not sure an SSD... I think I wouldn't even use an SSD without full whole drive encryption on it, because SSDs don't really erase data. So there's always the chance that you're going to have data left behind even without encryption. Having said that, it depends who you're worried about, because one doesn't know if there's a backdoor in closed source encryption software. By which I mean, and unfortunately, we've seen a little evidence of this from the Snowden releases. It's possible that if you're using encryption software like Microsoft's or Apple's or some other companies, that you can't see how it's written. You don't know if there's a backdoor for the feds. Now, if you're worried about the feds, in other words.
No, I'm not worried about.
Yeah, you just want generally to protect yourself, and I think that's just fine. In fact, it's easiest when you use the built-in encryption. Avoids a lot of trouble. You can go out and use TrueCrypt, which is an open source program. And then, you know, with TrueCrypt, you know, in theory, because we can read all the source code, we can manually verify for ourselves, or some expert can manually verify for you, that there is no backdoor, governmental or otherwise. The other issue with backdoors is that even if you're not worried about the feds, if a backdoor exists, there's always the risk someone else will find it and use it. So we don't, I don't like closed source proprietary encryption for that reason. However, that's a theoretical threat. I don't think you're going to have any problem. In fact, I recommend you do it, especially with a solid state drive, since there is no other way to protect yourself with solid state. There's no, you know, normally when you give away a computer or a hard drive, you can wipe it. You can use something like DBAN. It will write data on top of the sectors and then erase it and write it again, that kind of thing. It doesn't work well with solid-state drives because of the nature of the solid-state software, the wear leveling. You can't guarantee that you've overwritten everything. And so some data almost always leaks through the secure erase. So I do actually always turn on encryption on all my solid-state drives, even if they never leave the house, just in case you want to give it away. We're going to get to you, Zach, in just a minute. I don't want to start and have to take a break. Coming up in a little bit, about an hour from now, we've got Chris Marquardt, our digital photography guru. Our website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. You can go there and find answers to all the questions, audio and video, too, after the fact. James DeRuvo's writing everything I say down as I speak. So, and one more thing, if you go to techguylabs.com, by the way, you'll see a link to the chat room there and the phone number. But if you go there and you look at a question and you have a thought, because I know some of you sit there and you say, Leo, you're wrong. Please put it in the comments. It's very, very valuable. You add value to the site as a whole. Always free, always open. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was just reading up Anand Tech, which is one of my favorite geek hardware sites. Really great. A-N-A-N-D, AnandTech.com. Reviewing this new eDrive encryption, giving it a pretty solid thumbs up. Our caller was asking, he said he was about to buy a Samsung SSD hard drive with this encryption built in. What it is basically is something we're all familiar with, which is Microsoft's BitLocker. But it's using hardware-based encryption, which makes it much faster. The hardware for the encryption is actually built into the hard drive. And that makes a huge difference. Anand said encrypting his 100 gigabyte plus drive using the old BitLocker and software took well over an hour, less than five seconds with the hardware encryption. So I think it's a kind of a good thing, frankly, to have. Does not require TPM on your motherboard, but would be better with TPM. And you do have to leave UEFI on in other words, you're making a more secure machine. Makes a lot of sense. So good article. In fact, I'll put a link in the show notes to the Anatech review. Good article there on using these new E drives. This is, requires Windows 8, unfortunately. Or fortunately, if you've got Windows 8. Requires Windows 8 to do it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Zach in Los Angeles. I promised you'd be next, and you are. Welcome.
Thank you, Leo. I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller.
Thank you.
And I have a Hewlett-Packard laptop. I believe it's a notebook of some kind. It is Windows 7, which I really like. From what I understand, Windows 8 will be completely confusing to me, and I'm a little terrified of it. This computer that I'm using is really on its last legs. The monitor will just go black for 6 or 7 hours. It'll be on. I can hear little pop-ups or people trying to reach me, and I cannot see them.
Ah, so the computer's working, it's just the monitor's dark.
And there's also some keys that are, like, loose and missing, yeah. So I need a new computer.
It's beat up.
And what I'm afraid of is transferring all my files and music and pictures.
Right.
There seems to be about 10,000 pictures.
Now,
for some reason, whenever I save a picture, it saves it 20 times over.
Yeah. Now, I'm a little concerned because what I'm getting from this is you do have a copy of everything, one only, though, on that hard drive in the laptop, the old one.
Yes.
You don't have a backup.
I have a 3-terabyte Seagate backup, but I'm never sure if it is actually backing up.
Yeah, I hate that. Are you using Microsoft's backup program? What are you using to back up?
The Seagate plugs into the USB, and it just goes on at 10 o'clock every night.
Must be the software on the Seagate. Okay.
But if I put the cursor towards it, it will say backing up file 0%.
Good.
During the whole thing. So I am never sure. What my plan was, I wanted to see if this works according to you, was I was going to get Carbonite, which I knew about before you even started talking about it, but... And hopefully, I can upload everything into...
Well, but the problem is it takes a while to get that first set done.
That's what was a concern.
So you may be waiting and waiting. So that's one of the reasons they give you that 2-week free trial is because what they're hoping, depending on the amount of data you have and you can figure and the upstream bandwidth you have, you can figure out how long it'll take. But, 2 weeks usually is enough to get that first set done. But that's 2 weeks. It means you'd have to wait. So I think Carbonite's good. Don't hesitate to get it. But this is, since you haven't been using it all along, this isn't the solution for right now. You're going to get a new computer soon. Fortunately, you've got this 3-terabyte and you're in good shape. I would just drag your documents and settings folder from your old machine over onto this 3-terabyte hard drive. That'll get everything.
Okay, let me write that down. Drag?
It's called Documents and Settings, and it contains your account and every other account that's on that machine in that one folder, and you just drag that all over.
I drag it to the Seagate.
And put it on the Seagate. It'll take a while because it's going to copy everything. But now you have a full backup of all the files, not just your files, but anybody else who's logged onto that computer. You're all set.
Well, there's no one else that's logged on to
right.
it. I'm just
still a good idea. Maybe you have a dummy account, whatever.
I have some irreplaceable music, things that...
Well, and now, that's step two, because you want to verify that. And one of the reasons I don't like the blob-style backup programs Microsoft offers, probably the Seagate offers, is you have a big file on there, and you're looking at that, and you don't know what's in there. So this drag and copy, by dragging it over, you're copying it, just, and it takes a while, using... just plain old copy, you can now look at the Seagate, open up the file on the Seagate and open it. Make sure that, spot check them. Make sure they all copied over.
Because something you have to do manually.
Yeah, well, yeah. I would do it. You don't have to do every single one, but I would certainly look at them kind of randomly, make sure that none of them are zero file size, things like that. Kind of verify the document.
Okay. Well, I'm in a position to get a new computer, and I just wanted my information safe someplace in case the one I'm using it for some reason does kind of bust on me.
Yeah.
That I'd be able to extract everything into the new one.
Well, and that's why really what this is I want a good copy of my data. That's your backup. You want to have a good copy of the backup, okay?
So even if the pictures come back and there's 20 of them, I still would rather have 20 of them than
yeah, you want them all. And the nice thing is you don't have to restore them all into the new computer, but you've got a copy on that 3 terabyte Seagate in case you ever want them. Now, I do have to ask you what version of Windows you're using.
7.
Okay. So it's not it's documents and settings on every version prior to 7. I assumed your notebook was pretty old. It's not that old.
It's gonna, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's going to be in the slash users folder.
Slash users.
Yeah.
So you think that would be better than to get Carbonite and try and send everything off-site?
Yeah, yeah, because it'll take too long. Get Carbonite still, but just for future.
I had heard that somebody told me that it would take a long time for it to actually, you know, pull the information out of the computer, and it would be a race against time between, you know, getting that done. And
yeah, yeah. The Carbonite is fine if you've been using it all along and you have a full backup. Then you don't even have to think about it. You get the new computer, you log onto your Carbonite account, and you restore it, and you're done. And you haven't thrown away the old computer, so you can if something didn't copy, you can make sure you got it.
I think this one has 10 gigabytes of memory in it. And the Seagate backup I have is a 3 terabyte.
Yeah, you've got plenty of space.
So there will be that's
yeah,
plenty of
you
space.
You could make several hundred copies. They're telling me, and I think they're right, actually, you probably should use a program called the File and Settings Transfer Wizard.
File and Settings Transfer.
And that will get even more than just the document files that get all your settings. Use that and copy all that over to the Seagate. It'll take a while. Let it run overnight.
I hope everything is all right with this
well, backup. After it's done, you check it. And you're not throwing away the original yet anyway. So now you have the original, the broken computer. Can you use it? I mean,
yeah. It's
you plug it into a monitor.
A few times, the monitor will come back.
Yeah. You still don't throw that out. Save it for as long as you want. That's a backup in a way, right? You have the Seagate.
I would never throw it out.
Yeah, keep it because that hard drive. You can always, if the computer fails, you still could take the hard drive out and access it. So that's a backup, and then the Seagate will be another copy. And then you'll transfer the stuff you want using the File and Settings Transfer Wizard over to the new system.
My other question is, are there any new computers that still have Windows 7, or am I going to be forced into this Windows 8 thing? I hear you talk about...
Oh, yeah. In fact, HP got the ire of Microsoft, raised a little dander by putting out an ad saying, back by popular demand, Windows 7. So almost everybody continues to sell Windows 7 machines. No problem there. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo. We were talking before the break about moving to Windows, a new Windows machine, and our caller really wanted Windows 7. And you know he's not alone. Windows 8, even though it's been out a year now. Has it been a year? Is that possible? It's more than a year. Has really not penetrated the market. 10% of Windows users in the world, 10%, 1 in 10, use Windows 8. The rest are still using older versions of Windows. The majority are still using XP. So that's a problem. That's a problem because in 1 month, April 9th, Microsoft will stop supporting XP. They'll no longer patch it. If there's flaws, that's it. Over. So if you're one of the, I think it's 60% of Windows users who are still using XP, you might want to upgrade. And frankly, I think it's time to say Windows 8 is here to stay. And just bite the bullet. Windows 8.1 update 1 comes out, I think, next month. We're not sure exactly, but we're thinking next month, thereabouts. And that's going to solve, I think, a lot of problems people have. Supposedly, you'll be able to boot into the desktop. They're going to treat Metro apps a little bit more like regular apps. A lot of the things people don't like about Windows 8 will go away. We said that with Windows 8.1 too, but seriously. I think at this point, it's unfortunate. It's kind of like Windows Vista. Windows Vista never got over the first impression it made with people. And to this day, people still say, worst version of Windows ever. And actually, the worst was Windows ME, but we'll save that for another discussion for another day. But I think Windows 8 is now the Windows Vista. It's once you get tarred with that brush, the perception of people. But truth is, I think it's fine. You can make it behave pretty much like Windows 7. It fixes a lot of issues, including, by the way, file copying, which is much more reliable and speedy. I think Windows 8 is best. Now, yeah, you'll be getting 8.1. If you buy a machine that has 8 on it, you'll automatically be updated to 8.1. And as I said, Windows 8.1 Update 1 is due out in a month or so. And many people think it's going to be better. All right, Windows, here's the stat from CT Bob. I overstated the success of Windows XP. It's only 30%. Only 30%. Windows 7 is 45%. Only 5% of all Windows users are using Vista. 10% Windows 8. Hence the comparison. I worry about those 30% of Windows users who are still using Windows XP. That is bad news. Because it's going to be a field day for hackers. They're going to love it. Let's also talk a little bit about his idea of backup. I don't want anybody to think I don't love Carbonite, because I do and I use it. But I want you to understand that it's a part of a larger backup strategy. It's not all you need. I like having the idea of a local backup also. And I really worry about this guy. He's very typical. He doesn't have a backup at all. He has a dying computer and all his stuff is on that. And that's it. Warning bells should be going off. Because he thinks maybe he's got a copy because he plugs in the Seagate drive, pushes a button, but it never goes past 0%. Doesn't inspire confidence in my mind. So here's what I think you want to do. First of all, I don't recommend backup programs that make blobs because you can't tell if you got it. I like backup programs that just copy files, like normal copying. Because then you can open those files. You can see if they're okay. That's how Carbonite works. Unfortunately, it's not how Microsoft Backup works. So generally what I like to see is somebody making periodic, preferably daily copies to a local external drive that's always there. You can check it. You can open files from it. You can make sure you're getting the backups you think you are. Plus Carbonite. Between the two of those, you've got three copies. The original. Don't erase the original. Then you only have two copies. A backup, just because you name it a backup doesn't make it a backup. You have to have multiple copies. That's what makes it a backup. So you have the original on the computer. You have the external hard drive. That's two copies. And the third copy is up in the cloud. That's the kind of backup you want to do. So I think his idea of using Carbonite is fine, but it's going to take too long. Because the other thing to think about is online backups are limited by how much upstream upload bandwidth you have, which is always less than how much download you have. Plus, remember, a program like Carbonite is not going to take over your computer, not going to take over your bandwidth. It's going to be gentle. So it's not even going to use all of that bandwidth. It's going to trickle those files up. Which is, once you get that first backup done, then it's very quick because it's only copying, stuff that you knew stuff. But that first backup may take more than a few weeks. Depends how much you have. You could do the math yourself. I would say take your upstream bandwidth, whatever that is, a megabit. Let's say it's a megabit a second. Cut it in half because you don't want to use more than half of it. 512 kilobits per second. And then how much data you want to back up. I'd be careful about how much you back up. Don't back up the apps. Don't back up the operating system. Don't back up giant video files. Back up the stuff you really need. And try to keep it, I would say, under 100 gigabytes. Because if you do the math, that's going to take a while. It's going to take a month or two. More than that, it's going to take longer. How long?
I did 1.2
terabytes. How long did that take?
About 3 or 4 months.
3 or 4 months, yeah. So, I mean, it's not magic. You have to have the bandwidth that you have. It has to use what you got. There's no magic. No fairies are coming and taking your data and bringing it to the Carbonite servers. Rats. Although, Carbonite and a few others allow you to send them a hard drive. That's one way to do it. Do it quick. But if you know how to do that, then you don't need this discussion. Then you know what you're doing. So I would. The Gadget Priest is suggesting, I think he's absolutely right, the free Windows Sync toy is great. It's from Microsoft Sync. Just search for SYNC, Sync toy, TOY, all one word. That will allow you to say, I want you to sync everything in my documents to my external drive, and I want you to do it every day. You'll have to use a schedule, my Microsoft scheduler to do it, but I want you to do it every day. And it will automatically make sure that everything's on your internal drive is on your external drive exactly the same. That's the kind of thing you want. I use a program. It's a little bit better. You can schedule it called Second Copy. It's not free. SyncToy is free. Second Copy from Centered Systems. But there are a number of programs that will do this. That's a better backup because it's just making file copies. So you can always, you always have a duplicate folder on the external drive. All right, we're going to, enough of that. I really want, I don't want to belabor it, and yet I want you to back up, and I want you to understand what you're doing and make sure you have copies. And I hear so many things all the time. I hear people say, yeah, I made a complete backup, so I erased the originals. Now you don't have a backup because you only have one copy. If it's on, if there's one copy, it's not a backup. A backup, in my mind, three copies, one of them away from the computer, off-site, somewhere else. Now we say hi to Myrna in Lake Arrowhead, California. Hi, Myrna.
Good morning. Non-technical first, was I supposed to hear about your soup need while I was on hold?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. You have my deepest apologies. So when you're on hold, you hear what's on the radio show, but you also hear the in-studio conversations during commercials.
I did.
You had the choice. I could have played commercials down the line, but I thought you'd rather hear what flavor soup I want.
That and the coffee on the mixer.
Yeah, I did spill some coffee on the mixer. Hey, would you hang on? Because I don't know what your question is, but I can't wait to hear about it. Myrna, you're next. We got to take a break, though, for local news. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Our Tech Guy Show brought to you this week, the podcast brought to you this week by ShareFile.com, and actually brought to you every week by ShareFile in one sense, because I use ShareFile to share the audio for this show and the ads in the show with all the radio stations. I love ShareFile. It solves a real problem for me. In fact, it probably will solve a problem for you. In business these days, almost every business email has an attachment, a PowerPoint presentation, a contract, a document, a spreadsheet. It's not unusual. In my case, audio. We need the information to be received. We need to get it into the right hands, but we also need to control it. In some cases, we have a legal fiduciary responsibility to keep it private. And I can tell you a lot of the file sharing techniques out there are not designed for business, not designed to protect you or your clients. ShareFile is designed by business for business from Citrix. So, I mean, they know business better than anybody. They send not an attachment, but they send a secure link via email. In fact, if you have the Outlook plugin for ShareFile, it's awesome because it looks just like you're sending an email. You don't want to send these giant files via email. There's no security, no privacy. If it's a big file, it could bounce back. ShareFile lets you send files of almost any size with the highest degree of security. You'll get a notification when your file's been opened and by whom. It's easy to use. It integrates into any business. In fact, ShareFile can be customized and is for dozens of different businesses, from accounting to real estate and more. They really take a look. In fact, if you go to ShareFile.com, browse around, ShareFile.com, choose your industry and read about how they've customized it. Are you in the legal industry? ShareFile is really great for sharing contracts and documents for pleadings. You have access to your stuff in your ShareFile at all times. In fact, it synchronizes. So I have a ShareFile folder on this computer, and the ShareFile synchronizer runs in the background to keep it up to date. Files are automatically transported where I want them to go. And the people who get files from me, they don't have to sign up for a special service or be a member or anything like that. No, they get a link with my company logo on it, a download link. It explains how to do it. There's help. It's just, it couldn't be better. ShareFile is easy to use, integrates into any business. You can control who sees the file, when, for how long they can download it. I want you to try it. If you're not using ShareFile, sign up for our 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com. Don't click that big green button in the middle of the page or the one in the menu. Click the one at the very tippity top of the page there where it says podcast listeners. Click here. Click that green microphone. And make sure you enter in the offer code Tech Guy so they know you heard it on the Tech Guy Show. Do choose your industry, because that'll help you see exactly what capabilities ShareFile has. Are you in insurance, manufacturing, marketing, music, nonprofit, photography, printing, publishing, real estate, tech services, software? I mean, it's a long list. Find the industry that's right for you and then try ShareFile free for 30 days. ShareFile.com. Click that microphone at the top of the homepage and enter Tech Guy. ShareFile.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A, outside or Canada, outside the U.S. or Canada. My goodness, all you have to do is use Skype. It's toll free, so it won't cost you a penny. Just use your Skype out there. So you remember the big deal, the Target break-in, where we thought first, oh, 40 million credit cards stolen. Then we thought, oh, 70 million credit cards stolen. Then we found out it was as many as 110 million credit cards stolen. I have to think that might have had something to do with the fact that finally we were going to see the end of the credit card as we know it in the United States. This has happened all over the rest of the world. But I think the cost of replacing so many credit cards has finally convinced Visa and MasterCard and Discover Card that they got to do something. So they're going to adopt, starting in October of next year, so it's October 2015, the chip and PIN technology that's used around the rest of the world. Not sure why this never took hold in the United States. There were moves to do this a long time ago. It's much more secure. The way it works, if you buy something in Europe, you insert your credit card into a slot. Usually, if it's a restaurant, the server brings it to you, a little machine. You insert your card, or he'll swipe it for you. You enter a PIN number, and you may or may not have to sign a receipt. But that's an extra level of security, because the card has not merely a mag stripe in it, but an actual chip. And the PIN has to match the chip. The reason they think this would make it more secure, well, there's several reasons. One is, of course, the entry of the PIN. Although we did learn that the Target break-in did include people, the hackers were able to get PIN numbers. However, the credit cards embedded with these microchips are harder to duplicate, and this is the key. They're more expensive to duplicate, so it's much more difficult. Now, I will... If you've been paying attention, you know that anytime we say, oh, it's so much harder for hackers to do this, hackers immediately go, no, it's not. And they demonstrate a technique around. Where there's money to be made, I have absolute faith hackers will figure out a way. But it's more expensive, more difficult to clone a credit card if you have to put this microchip. And the microchip has to have embedded in it this PIN number. You can imagine that'll slow them down. Swipe and sign, which is what we use, is being replaced by chip and PIN. October 2015, all the big credit card people are going to do it. Now, somebody's been asking in the chat room, and it's a good question, what happens when you use a chip and PIN card online? It's very much like any other online transaction. Obviously, you're not signing a piece of paper online either. You still give your credit card number. You'll give that 3 or 4 digit number on the back of the credit card as well. And you'll probably be asked for some verifying information, your zip code or billing address, that kind of thing. So online will not change and may not be more secure. But frankly, a lot of credit card, I think people assume that online is a source of a lot of credit card fraud. It's not. The Target heist came from point of sale systems in Target. They got in, it turns out, we think now, it got in through an account set up for the air conditioning maintenance guy, the HVAC company that serviced the Target stores had an account on their computer systems. The bad guys, the hackers, figured out what that account was, injected malware, probably very similarly to the malware that you might get injected on your computer, either through an email, a targeted email, that kind of thing. The malware specifically targeted at the point of sale software used by Target, and by the way, many other retailers. And boom, 110 million credit card numbers and PIN numbers gone. So I suspect that was the final straw. So many credit cards companies had to replace credit cards. They said, we're going to do something about this. Although MasterCard said, no, we've been planning this for years and blah, blah, blah. I don't know why it never took off in the U.S. some credit card companies say, well, the U.S. hasn't been really a hotbed for fraud. Really? Really? It's expensive, that's why. Because you have to, these cards are more expensive, plus you have to change the credit card terminals. Point of sale will be a different kind of terminal. So, yeah, I think they were trying to save money. And it only made sense when they were losing more money to hackers than they were going to save. So, good. It's about time. When this Target thing happened, I was wondering, and many others were wondering, why are we still on this antiquated system when a better system exists? Well, now you know. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's the number, Michael. Oh, wait a minute. No. We got Myrna in Lake Arrowhead. I'm sorry, Myrna, I didn't forget you.
I thought you had.
Fire away.
I'm in the mountains. I stream Clear Channel KFI 24/7.
Good woman.
I woke up this morning hearing it just shut down. No explanation. Computer reads that I have a very good Wi-Fi signal, and I have no internet connection.
Are you using so it's not just that. Your internet's down.
Yeah.
Can you surf? Can you go? Can you open a web page?
Wait. You have to hear this whole crazy story before you ask questions.
Okay.
I have Wi-Fi, but I can't use the internet. So I go to my Internet Connections Advanced, and I see the little checked boxes, about 8 of them for Skype, no loss. I uncheck them. And then there's about 8 or 10 little boxes checked with Teredo, T-E-R-E-D-O. And I'm saying, what the heck is Teredo? I'll uncheck him. I guess I'll find out. I unchecked him, and I had an internet connection. I go to my laptop, which has Windows 7 on it, and I Google Teredo to try to find out what the heck did I just go through. And I find a Microsoft instruction for turning off Teredo. So my question is, what in the heck did I just do?
So, Teredo was something that was put on your router or probably your router by your internet service provider. Did the internet service provider give you the router?
Yes.
Yeah. Teredo is designed to give you access to the new internet protocol, which will be rolling out, we hope, someday soon, or maybe not. I don't know. We run out of internet numbers. So the internet protocol we use now, version 4, is being replaced by a newer version, version 6, that has many more numbers. So we won't run out. We kind of needed to do this. Now, there are other solutions, and I think a lot of people think this is going to be a nightmare. But Teredo, T-E-R-E-D-O, is designed to give you access to IP version 6 addresses on your IP version 4.
Got it.
Network. It comes on Windows. It's normal. Probably your internet service provider enabled it. Turning it off is interesting. And that fixed it, huh?
Boxes. I've been on the internet since then, but now I see that 2 boxes have gotten rechecked.
Well, okay, so I'm reading about it here. Teredo is installed on all copies of Windows Vista and later. You can disable it, but it's not an easy thing to disable. And it could cause problems. I'm interested that your network has it turned on, frankly. You're not on a business. This is your home network, right?
Home network with Verizon.
Yeah. Let me investigate. We'll talk more in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've got the Teredo mystery. We're talking to Myrna in Lake Arrowhead, California. She has Verizon. Verizon's security suite, I found in the break, turns on Teredo. Teredo's harmless, by the way. Nothing to fear. And I don't think it was related to why your radio stopped playing.
No, wait, it was all internet. I couldn't connect to Google.
Yeah. I don't think it was related to why the internet stopped working.
All I did was uncheck the boxes and then it worked.
Well, I guess you could call Verizon. Not that that's going to be wonderful, but that is part. That is something that the Verizon security suite turns on, and so it's because of them that you see it.
Uh-huh.
Normally, I don't recommend you go into the network settings and uncheck protocols. It's called a protocol. It's a rule book for how to communicate with the internet.
Right. I knew that, but I was surprised that there were 8 or 10 boxes all checked.
Yeah. You want to leave it on. So I would check them all and see if your internet continues to work. If it does not, wow, you've discovered something.
Well, I'm good.
I think it's unrelated, frankly, is what I'm saying.
What a coincidence it was.
Well, but these things happen. It is the default for the router. It should be turned on. You're actually using it in some surprising situations. There are websites that you... I don't think there's anything you need it for. But, if Verizon has it enabled, then I would leave it on. My concern is if it really did block your internet. So let's do an experiment.
Well, I have another question.
Sure.
If it's a little bit iffy, why is it part of a Microsoft?
It ain't iffy. It's not iffy. It's a
Microsoft provides.
It comes with all versions of Windows.
Yeah.
Verizon turns it on because internet service providers are trying to figure out this IPv6 conundrum. So they're turning it on for reasons that they know that I don't, but probably having something to do with wanting to use IPv6 tunneling with your system. It's probably good. They probably like it because they can use it to control how much bandwidth you're using, things like that. But I don't want to speak for Verizon because I don't know.
Well, the only thing that concerns me is having Microsoft tell me the way to remove it.
Well, that's because some people want to remove it. You should not.
Okay.
Because your internet service provider will not be happy.
Okay.
It's harmless. I think it's completely coincidental. Your internet is iffy up there anyway, I bet you.
Not really.
No?
I'm really in Twin Peaks, which is a little further down the mountain. And I really have good Wi-Fi through Verizon.
Yeah. I would ask Verizon about it. Because they'll say, no, mess with Toredo.
Yeah, I know. And it'll give me a long time to find somebody.
And by the way, that unchecking that box does not disable Toredo. In fact, you noticed it was checked again, isn't it?
Two boxes are.
Yeah. So I think it's unrelated. I think it's a... normally you'd have to restart anyway. So I think it was just magic. Magic. If you're really concerned about it, I would check with Verizon because they're the ones who turn it on.
Okay.
And I think they have it on for a reason, frankly. I don't know what that reason is, but I think they have it on for a reason. And you should ask them, hey, why is Toredo turned on? You say, I called the tech guy. He explained to me you're doing IPv6 tunneling. Why?
Okay.
And then they'll say, what? Because you're going to have to get escalated because I guarantee you the first person you talk to won't know what you're talking about.
I am marking my Google calendar for 8 to 4 next Tuesday.
I know. I'm sorry.
Verizon phone.
I know. Please. Hey, do try. Just is it in front of you right now?
Yes, I've got both the laptop and the PC on.
And you probably see Toredo in both, right?
Well, no, because I went to Google to see what Microsoft said about Toredo. Yeah. So I'm seeing an advanced setting.
All it is, you know, you have Ethernet, you have TCP/IP, you have different protocols in the computer. Toredo is a protocol that allows you to operate with this new IPv6. There was a lot of concern last year that we were going to run out of numbers. Because nobody ever thought the internet would get this big.
Yeah.
And so people like Vint Cerf, the father of the internet, said, we've got to do something about this. They created this new protocol that's completely incompatible, by the way. And you would have to upgrade all your hardware. Everything would have to be upgraded. Your routers and so forth. Not your computer, but your router would have to be upgraded. And the internet service providers would have to upgrade their hardware. Nobody wanted to do this. So there's all sorts of little workarounds people are trying. Hoping to avoid this. Eventually, we're probably going to have to go there, but it's just expensive, and it's causing a problem for Myrna.
It certainly did.
It's already causing problems.
I have one more little question about Toredo.
Yes.
Why in the world would the advanced setting screen. Provide me with about 20 boxes for Toredo.
I don't know. Sounds like you're remaking the connections unnecessarily.
Well, no, I'm not. Verizon.
Well, Windows is doing it. That's probably not a problem. I would ignore that. Boy, I don't, you know, this is a weird thing. The only people who really know of Verizon, we at least know what it is. We know it's harmless. It's not a problem. It likely did not impinge on your internet connection. I think that was something else. Toredo should normally be checked if Verizon had it checked. So, you know, you could uncheck them all and reset your, you'd have to reboot anyway before it would make any difference.
I even try to reboot, so yeah. I've got all the little Band-Aids.
Yeah.
All right, Leo.
I'm sorry, I'm not much help, Myrna, but stay, you know, let me know what happens. I'm very curious.
I will let you know.
Yeah. You can email Leo at techguylabs.com with your outcome.
I will tell you because I'm good at
follow up. I can tell that. You're good. I'm impressed.
I'm the same age as your mother, by the way.
You know what, Myrna? I am very impressed.
Thank you.
You are a geek.
I'm an old geek.
And I say that with love and encouragement. That's a good thing to be.
It's a granny geek.
Granny geek. Yes. You now have a nickname, Myrna, anytime you call.
All right.
Thanks. Great to talk to you, granny geek. Gosh, that's such an interesting issue. I think it's coincidental. And unfortunately, this happens where something goes wrong and you do something that has nothing to do with it and it gets better. And now you think, aha, that did this. Correlation does not mean causation. Granny geek. Gam gam. I love it. Michael in Des Moines, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
I'm going great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. And, I got a question for you about my, I got a Note 2 on T-Mobile, if that means anything. I was kind of wanting to do wireless charging, and I got the wireless module in it and readjusted it to, so it would work, or try to get it to work. Set it on the charging pad, and the pad acknowledges it, but the phone does not charge.
Does the Note 2 have wireless charging? I don't think it does.
Well, you have to add the...
Oh, you add that little thing in there. Yeah, I use that too. Hold on, we'll talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll explain how that works. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, joins us each and every week to talk about digital photography. Hello, Chris.
A very cheery photo guy today because I solved a big problem.
You seem so happy. What happened?
You know, over the last months, we kept talking about this. You keep getting all these new cameras and Olympus, and now a Sony. I'm still searching for that smaller kind of camera, especially now where with the Everest trek coming up in May, where we're gonna hike up to pretty high elevations, and I want a lighter camera just for the walking and to have not to have to carry so much weight. And you know me, I'm a Canon guy. I still shoot the Canon 5D Mark II, which is a beast. It's huge.
Oh, but it's such a great camera.
It is. It is wonderful. So
it's what
I was
use
looking
too.
Into.
I love it.
Yeah, and I was looking into the Micro Four Thirds system, but then, you know me, I shoot large format and medium format, and the sensor size is an issue for me.
Me too, yeah.
And I was looking for something lightweight, and I took out my old Minolta X700, which is an analog SLR, and I kind of took this as a benchmark. So with the lens, that's kind of 700 grams. That's like... what would that be? 700 grams, less than a pound, or about a pound? So that was kind of my benchmark, and I was looking at cameras, but I didn't want to buy into a new system and spend $2,500 just for a camera and a lens. You know, I was really torn, really, really torn.
Be nice if you could use those old Canon lenses.
Well, and then what I did is I put this out to my community, to the Tips from the Top Floor community, and said, I need help. My last episode was pretty much all about, I need help. Help me. And there were several who got back to me and said, "Why have you had a look at the Canon 100D?
100D, what's that?
Well, that's one of those cameras that I never looked at because it's one of those entry-level cameras, an entry-level DSLR.
It's like a point-and-shoot.
Well, no? Not really. It's a proper DSLR. Now, this is the 5D Mark II. I'm holding this up to the camera, so for all the people on the radio, just imagine
it. You can hear how heavy that is.
It's a huge camera.
It's huge.
Now watch Leo's reaction when I add in the 100D. Oh,
so that's more like the size of my Olympus OMD or my my newest Sony A7. It's a very small, very compact.
It is very small. It's an APS-C sensor, so it's a bit smaller than a full frame.
But that's a good size sensor.
That much smaller.
No, that's good, yeah.
And it has 18 megapixels.
Yeah, 18.
It is
all right, that's good.
It's pretty much a grown-up DSLR. Just with the only difference that it's really, really tiny.
Does it use your Canon 5D lenses?
Yes, it does.
It'll crop them, obviously, right?
It has a it is a 1.6 crop, but it is literally this is my 51.4 that I have on this. I mean it kind of defeats the purpose if I put on my big 300 millimeter lenses and things, but smaller lenses absolutely perfect for that. It shoots video. It weighs 0.9 pounds per camera.
All right. What did it cost you?
That's the other thing.
It's really expensive.
450 euros.
What? I'm looking at it on Amazon. And now, in the US of A, it is about $539 with a kit lens, with the 18 to 55 kit lens. So that's, you know what, that's a high-end point-and-shoot range.
Now, I put this camera through its paces. It has an optical viewfinder. It is an SLR, so it has this mirror box in it. So if you look through the viewfinder, you will see the picture straight through the lens on an optical path, which is one of the things that I personally just, I love that. I kind of need that. I put it through its paces for a few days. Yes, it does. It isn't as fast. Well, actually, it shoots 4 frames a second, so it's not that bad. It has a smaller buffer, so after 4 frames in continuous shooting, you'll have to wait. But, I mean, that's the speed you get. It shoots up to ISO 3200. Which is very usable. It goes up to 12,800, but that's quite grainy. But 3200, fine, 6400 in a pinch. It does pretty much everything I need. It's sometimes a bit more complicated because it has a couple of buttons less. But, I mean, even the buttons on the back, I mean, there are like 9 buttons on that camera, so you have direct access to quite a few things here.
You know, I just bought a new camera. I don't want you to be telling me about this. This is making me
nervous. The thing is,
this cost
I'm so
a third
because,
of, I know, more or less, a fifth, yeah, and eighth I of can, my new camera.
And I can stay within the system that I'm used to, which means I have an investment. I have a ton of lenses that I can keep using.
And now, I should mention, in the U.S., you're going to find it as a Canon EOS Rebel SL1.
It's the Rebel SL1, and in Japan, it's the KISS something. So KISS X7.
Yeah, but in the U.S., the Rebel SL1. I've recommended these Rebels for a long time. The T2i was their first T2i, right? And then the 3 and the 4, and they've gotten better and better and better, and they're great entry-level cameras. This is a great camera with an APS-C sensor. That's a nice big sensor.
Now, here's one more reason why I took this camera. And it is, I mean, you know me. I keep telling people you don't need a special camera. It's not the camera that takes the picture. It's the photographer.
Right.
I could have gone to a 5D Mark III or something else. But I want to prove a point here. So for the foreseeable future, I am trying to use this camera as much as I can. And shoot with this camera just to show people that it is not the camera, that you can use an entry-level DSLR and still get good pictures.
And it's so much more compact, which is very nice.
It is very compact. It's the depth of it is a bit more than your Olympus just because it has this mirror box built in.
Yeah,
but everything else around it is just, I mean, it's not as rugged as a big Mark III something. It's not as watertight. It's from a build point of view. It's still, I mean, it feels still very sturdy. So I'm not worried about that at all.
All right. There you go. I mean, this is something that I see a lot of pros now kind of rebelling, if you'll pardon the phrase, against these big camera systems. Nikon particularly just kind of has gotten out of control. The D3 was just like, it felt like you were carrying a backpack.
Yes.
And of course, everybody wants to be able to be mobile, to move around. There's another good reason to get a smaller camera. It's not as intimidating.
That's one of the big reasons I have this, so I can do better street photography. Right. Because people, if they see you approach with a huge camera and an even bigger lens on it, they will be on guard.
That's so, why I love my Olympus OMD, because it looks like a toy. Yes. You look like a tourist. It's a, you know, you don't look like you're a serious photographer, and yet you can be. Good. All right. Well, this is a new recommendation. We have for a long time recommended the Rebels. And I guess this is a new one. I hadn't seen this one. The EOS SL1, Rebel SL1. That's what it's called in the U.S. In Europe, it's 100D. And I have to say that one of the Rebel, I don't think, was an APS-C. The XTs.
The original digital Rebel, the first one, was an APS-C. They started off as APS-C camera. So it's in that tradition. And again, I put it through its paces. I love the image quality.
Now, are you going to abandon your 5D, or is this just your backup?
No. It is now a backup camera, so the 5D is my commercial camera. I will certainly have that with me when I go to Nepal, but this is just so much more handy, so tiny, so lightweight. And I can use my lenses. I'm a happy guy now.
All right, there you go. Thank you for the review. Chris Marquardt does a great podcast, Tips from the Top Floor. He also does wonderful workshops, including that Nepal workshop coming up at discoverthetopfloor.com. His Discover Lightroom book is flying off the shelves, video. And he's got a new little book called 1,000 Photos, which I cannot wait to read. Chris, thank you. We'll talk to you next week. And I'll have your assignment, everybody, your Chris Marquardt assignment right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Each week, or actually each month, Chris Marquardt gives us a photo assignment. It's not a competition. It's just for fun. But an assignment to give us an excuse, really, to go out and take pictures with whatever camera you've got. You don't need those fancy cameras Chris has. You could use your camera phone. This month, we're illustrating the idea, the concept. Three. I don't know what, you know. I'm not going to say number. I don't know. It could be three. That's what whatever that means to you. And the way it works, take a picture or two or three and upload them to Flickr. That's free. That's the photo sharing site from Yahoo, Flickr.com. And once you upload them, tag them with the word or number three and submit it to our Tech Guy group. You have to be a member of the group, but it's free to join. It's easy. Look for the Tech Guy group. About 10,000 members more, I think, now. And Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you. And then once a week, you could submit one new picture. So up to a total of four pictures. And then at the end of the month, Chris will pick three to talk about on the show. So our topic of the week, three. We were talking before the break, and I apologize for putting you on hold so long, to Michael in Des Moines. He has a Galaxy Note 2, very nice phone. I love it. T-Mobile, that doesn't matter. You bought the little thing that makes it wireless. Is it the thing you take off the back, you snap it in on top of the battery?
Yes, it is.
And does the Note 2, I know the Note 3 does, because I do this with the Note 3. Does it have contacts?
Yeah, it's on the side of the battery.
Yeah.
And I've repositioned that so it made good contact.
So, make sure, you're getting they almost snap in. The one I have anyway, they'll almost snap. You know, you can't do it wrong because it has little protrusions. This is an amazing thing. I wish I had my Note 3 with me. It's an amazing thing. And it was only $8 or $9. I got it on Amazon. There are a number of different companies make these. They're very thin, so you don't have to get a special back or anything. And the Note 2 and the Note 3 are made to use these, so they have those contacts. So you make sure it's touching the contacts just right, then carefully put the back on. I use one part of the problem with wireless charging is some of the chargers are more finicky than others. So what kind of charger are you using?
I got it off of Amazon. I actually got my hands on a Nexus 5, and I could set the Nexus 5 on the pad, right, and it'll charge it.
And it's working.
So that's definitely working.
So good. We know the pad's working. And, right, and you've tried positioning the Note 2. Now, on the Note 3, I'll get a little pop-up that says, you're wireless charging. Your S Pen may not work, but you are charging. Do you get that? I don't know if you get that on the Note 2 or not.
No, I don't get no acknowledgement.
No acknowledgement.
I don't see nothing showing that it's getting any of it. Now, the charging pad seems to acknowledge it because the light turns blue. but the phone itself does not acknowledge at all. And I took it off, repositioned it, and I've not been successful with it.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I have used a similar device on my Note 3. In fact, I love it because it gives the Note 3 wireless charging, which is very convenient. I bought a very nice wireless charging pad, which I recommend. Now, you've already got one, so there's no need for it. But it comes from a company called Tilt, TYLT.com, and it's called the View Wireless Charger. And the reason I like it is, and I've tried a number of wireless chargers from Energizer and Anker and so forth, but the reason I like this one is, first of all, it's a little stand, so the phone sits in it very nicely. But also, it seems to be less finicky than a lot of the chargers I've used. Some chargers, you have to move the device around, get it right in the right spot so that the inductance coil in the back of the phone hits the inductance coil in the charger just right, and so forth and so on. This one seems to be much less finicky. It does have a light, and I think that's a nice feature that lights up when it's charging. I just don't know. You don't see any charging at all?
No, the phone don't show any acknowledgement of charging at all. You know, you should see where the battery is.
Yeah, a little lightning or something.
Yeah, and that don't do it. I moved the phone around on the charging pad and...
Well, I just don't know. I mean, mine works. You can. Let me see which one I got. I'm going to go check on Amazon because I bought a couple of different ones, and I found one that just really worked perfectly. And one of the reasons I really liked it is it does not bulge the battery back up at all. So it really doesn't take up any space.
Well, I actually bought a second one thinking the first one didn't work, and neither one of them's working.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I have done this, and it works for me, but I don't know if the one you're using is, there seems like a broad range of these, some of them cheaper than others.
Yeah, well, the second one I bought was a better one than the first one.
The one I got that I use is the Dew Cooler. I think that's the one I got. You know, I got two of them, and I'm not sure which one I'm using. Darn it. I should have made a note on it. I'll bring my Note 3, so to speak. I'll make my Note 3 in. I think I'm using the Dew Cooler. And it really does work. It's kind of a neat idea. I like wireless charging. I don't think it's as efficient as... No, I'm sorry. The one I'm using is not that. It's the phone, F-O-N-E, wireless charger. And it was $22. It was a little pricey. Phone salesman wireless charger. It supports NFC. That's one of the reasons I liked it. I don't lose my NFC. I'll put a link on our website to the one I'm using. I don't know if that means it'll work better or maybe there's something going on with your system. I don't know. I can't tell.
Okay.
But mine works beautifully.
Yeah, I know you. I seen it, I think, what was it, a couple weeks ago, and that's why.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, man. Okay, according to a ham in our chat room, KC6TTR, wireless charging is only supported on the AT&T Note 2. It doesn't work on the T-Mobile Note 2.
Oh.
Oh, come on.
Well, they got the contacts. That's
yeah, crazy. They're not connected to anything.
Oh, that's...
Oh, hilarious. Come on, man. You know, I really hate that, and you see it a lot, where cell carriers will specify changes to the hardware. Sometimes slight invisible changes that you wouldn't even know about, like this one.
Mm.
Well, thank you, chat room. Thank you, KC6TTR. He says you need to mod the PC board to enable it. But there is a thread. Wow. There is a thread on XDA developers all about this. You could search. So there is a mod you can make. But that's very frustrating.
Yeah,
I can't imagine why T-Mobile wouldn't want you to wireless charge your phone. But they don't. So there you go. There's the answer. Thank you, chat room. Once again, brilliant. And again, another reason. Before I buy a phone from a carrier, a couple of reasons I don't like to do that. The other reason is because the carrier lards it up with all of their special software. Oh, you can't live without my AT&T or my T-Mobile and all that junk. And I don't want it. Usually you can't uninstall it. So I tend to like to buy unlocked phones, not from an individual carrier. That's a shame. I got to tell you, the thing about wireless charging, the number of phones do support wireless charging. Galaxy S4 has that built in. The Nokia Lumia phones have that built in. It's cool because you could just, well, at least the promise is you can just plop the phone down, it'll charge, and then you pick it up on your way out the door. Problem is, it's a little more finicky than that. You have to position it carefully. Wireless charging seems to be less efficient, so it's slower to charge, and perhaps more of the power is dissipated in heat, so it's probably not, eco-friendly. I like it, though, and with this little stand from Tilt made it very easy for me and made me appreciate it a little bit better. Gosh, I'm sorry. All right, T-Mobile, I ought to. Nexus 5 has it. Nexus 7 tablet and Nexus 10 tablet have it. That's right, the Google tablets have it. Even on T-Mobile, the Galaxy S4 has it. Why would T-Mobile disable that? I don't understand. Dave in Los Banos, California. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon, W6TWT.
Ah, good day to you, sir. What's your call sign?
KG6NUO.
KG6NUO, hello.
Hello there. And I don't have a tech question, but more of a hardware question, as I'm a bad boy with breaking cell phones.
You should meet my daughter.
Well, I tend to break... The Motorola, the hard, tough Motorola cell phones were fine, but the newer ones, I break
the face on
them all the time.
Well, you know why? They have glass all over the front of them. Who thought that was a good idea?
I know. So I was wondering if you had any recommendations. I'm on one of your sponsors, Ting.
Okay, hang on. We're going to take a break. Okay. Tough cell phones when we continue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, talking tech, answering your questions, helping you understand the magic that is modern technology. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside the U.S. or Canada, use Skype. Who are we talking to, Heather? It was Dave, right, in Los Banos? Hello, Dave.
Hello, sir.
Sorry to put you on hold like that.
That's no problem. Got to pay those bills.
So for those just joining us, restate your question. That way we'll...
I'm looking for some type of cell phone that I can use that's going to be durable.
It's not going to fall apart. And as we mentioned, you know, the modern touchscreen phones all have glass fronts. They have to. And... So if you want a smartphone, you're going to have a phone with a glass pane of glass right in the front there. And even if you have this in a case, if it lands on the glass, you know, glass shatters. And it's kind of hard to get around that. They try to use Gorilla Glass, which is a toughened glass product, but it's still not perfect. It's a material science problem, frankly. You want glass to be scratch resistant, but at the same time, that makes it brittle. You know, plastic is... less brittle, but it scratches. So it's, Gorilla Glass is nice because it seems a little bit more resistant. Apple has bought a sapphire manufacturing company and apparently is starting to make sapphire somethings. We don't know what they are, and that may be because sapphire is more durable. I'm not sure. Do you want a smartphone? Do you want one with touchscreen?
I would like one as a smartphone capacity, but... I'm also open to the ability of tethering my notepad to the to the account.
Yeah, I mean, that's tablets are even worse because it's a bigger pane of glass. I would get a good case. There are a number of great cases that have covers that go over them when you're not using the phone. So if you drop the phone, you have less likelihood of breaking it. I like OtterBox. That's a good one. Otterbox.com. They make cases with covers. So that will work on almost any phone. There are a couple of others that I've used. Ballistic, Ballistic, also makes very good, tough cases. In fact, we had a Ballistic case we dropped off the roof of this building to review, and it didn't break. The phone survived. In fact, dropped two phones off. And the Ballistic case protected it, even though it bounced four or five times. So that's probably your best bet. Touch phone is going to be particularly durable. I mean, almost all of them use Gorilla Glass now, so they're all hardened glass.
I noticed my last two encounters with this, I've broken the, it's actually been the screen rather than the actual glass that is broken.
Oh, interesting. So the glass was intact, not shattered, not cracked?
Right, no. But the one I have now, it's just the screen that's broken and is all distorted like a laptop.
I think an OtterBox would help you there. That's probably because you sat on it.
Well, I have the habit, being a radio guy, climbing up on the roof and having the phone. Obviously, the radios are hanging on the hip, but the phone always goes in the pocket.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know what happens in the pocket. It bends.
And, of course, that torque won't necessarily break the glass. Glass is actually surprisingly flexible, but the screen may not survive it. And so OtterBox is really good for those situations. OtterBox or Ballistic, either one, they're very similar. They have a soft rubber cover, which then is snapped on the phone and then surrounded by a hard plastic cover. And this double protection means it's very durable. And several of the models have either covers that close, or they have belt clips that have a cover. So I tell you, I know a number of people who are very accident prone, including my daughter, who's gone through 4 or 5 iPhones in the last few years. And I finally gave up and just gave her an OtterBox, and she's using it, and she has not broken it.
Okay, I will have to give that a try then. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. 73. Take care.
You bet. 73.
Hams would appreciate this. There's a building in downtown Los Angeles that has just received an order from the FCC to cease and desist. What are they ceasing and desisting? They're fluorescent lights. The Ernst & Young building has fluorescent lights that are interfering with Verizon's 700 megahertz cell phone band. The Federal Communications Commission, which gets involved in stories like this, has sent the company. Actually, they've been investigating it for some time. They finally gave up. The company that owns the building, Ernst & Young Plaza, it's a 41-story office tower near downtown L.A. The FCC contacted them in April of last year, asked them, actually Verizon contacted the FCC and the building to resolve the issue. Brookfield Office Properties, which manages the building, said, well, we're investigating, but never fixed it. FCC got another complaint in December. Finally, the FCC has now threatened them with fines, daily fines, and even perhaps criminal prosecution. It's the ballast in the fluorescent lights, the little electronic gear that gets the light to fluoresce. These, you've heard them buzz. I mean, fluorescent lights are noisy. I'm sure you've heard them buzz. You've heard, all sorts of problems with them. Well, apparently, in some cases, General Electric, which makes these particular ballasts, says the ballast can be malfunctioning and produce frequencies that interfere with the cell network. So if you're in an office building with fluorescent lights and your cell doesn't work there, hey, maybe it's the lights. General Electric says we know about this problem, and it's only in some of the lights that we make. I hope they fix it. General Electric says, and actually they sent out a bulletin that said a small number of their Ultramax ballasts, quote, produced unintentionally high-frequency radio emissions that have the potential to cause interference with certain types of wireless communications. Wow. Who knew? An office building. Brian in San Diego, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Wonderful. I just want to let you know, long time, first time. It's actually my first time ever calling a radio station. So.
Well, welcome. It's not so hard, is it?
No, not as difficult as I thought.
Welcome.
Hey, I wanted to ask you a question about the Microsoft Surface. I'm looking to get my girlfriend a tablet for Valentine's Day.
Aw, that's so romantic.
Yeah, and I know that it wasn't that well received, but for what she's trying to do, I don't know if it would be too much of an issue for her if she were to get it.
Well, the Surface is a good choice for some people. It just depends exactly on what she does and what she wants.
Well, basically, it's just web browsing. The biggest thing that she likes with it is it has Microsoft Word.
Right.
That she'll be using a lot. But I know you can get other tablets and get pretty compatible Microsoft programs.
You cannot get Microsoft Office on anything but a Windows tablet, though. That's something Microsoft hasn't yet released for Android or Apple. So if Word is what she wants, you know, Android has Quick Office, but that's not going to be the solution. I think you're right on. I would look at the Nokia 2520. Which is a beautiful little tablet, very elegant. You can get it in colors. And it's Windows RT. It's not full version of Windows. But if you say what she wants is Word and to surf, this is perfect. Comes with a full version of Office. It's part of the price. It's very small. It's 10 inches. I think it's a very good choice.
Okay, so I guess since it's an Android, it would work pretty well with her Android phone.
Yeah, I mean, well, she has an Android phone, and an Android tablet's a great choice, and lots less expensive. A Nexus 7, for instance, which I like a lot from Google, is only a couple hundred bucks compared to $500 or $600 for the Windows tablet. So I think there are reasons to go with Android. If she's used to Android, it does have Quick Office. She can read and somewhat write Microsoft Word documents with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you have an old gadget, let's say you have a Galaxy Note 2 and you realize it doesn't do wireless charging and you want to get rid of it, you should go to gazelle.com, get top dollar. I wonder, just out of curiosity, what his Galaxy Note 2 is worth. Sell your iPhone, your Galaxy, your iPad, your iPod, Macintosh computers. They take phones from BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, Samsung. Let's see, what did he have? He had a T-Mobile Galaxy Note 2. In good condition, I presume. $115. There you go. We got you more than halfway to your Galaxy Note 3. They will. Now, this is beauty. This is the beauty part. This quote is good for 30 days. You don't have to sell it now. You have 30 days to decide. But do get the quote now, because I got to tell you, the value on these things is not going up. Have an old iPhone. Oh, wait, we had an iPhone 4S earlier, right? And she wanted to upgrade to or something like it. $90 for an old 4S? Wow! GAZELLE.com. Your quote is good for 30 days, so get it now. Maximize the value. When you decide to pull the trigger, and by the way, do as many gadgets as you can find, because you might as well get them all in that box. It's postage paid. They'll send you the box with a prepaid mailing label on it. You pop it in the mail to Gazelle. Their data experts will wipe the data if you forget. They turn it around very quickly. And then you get a check or a PayPal credit or an Amazon gift card, which I like because I use Amazon a lot, and they bump that value 5% on the Amazon gift cards. They add an additional 5%. I like Gazelle, GAZELLE, gazelle.com. It's a great way to get cash for your old gadgets. Don't let them gather dust. They're not getting more valuable. Try it today, gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see here. Where were we? Moving along. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Terry.
Is that Terry? I can't quite read it.
Terry in Costa Mesa, yeah.
Thank you. I'm getting old. Can you read that, young lady? Terry in Costa Mesa, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey. Hi.
Hi, Terry.
I have an odd question. I've got 3 years worth of text messages from one person on my iPhone 5S. And, of course, it was transferred over. And I don't want to delete them. And at one point, I was actually transcribing them. I want to keep them all.
No, yeah. You don't have to transcribe them. I don't think.
Well, I want to know how to put them in a document and get them off my phone, because now it's 6.2 gigabytes.
Maybe you do have to transcribe them. You're kidding me.
No, what? Don't laugh. Let me
what?
Tell you, I've been deleting apps. I go to take a picture and it goes, oh, you have to check your storage. So I'm transferring pictures off my phone constantly. And it's like 6.2 gigabytes, I think, for...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know why? Because they never erase any of the images or anything. So it is more than you thought, I think. So there's a couple of things. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a couple of things you could do. First of all, the first thing you should do is back up your phone, right? Hook it up to a computer with iTunes and click the button that says backup.
I do that.
Good. That way you have a copy of it. Because you don't want to lose that. And now you need a program called iExplorer.
iExplorer.
iExplorer from MacroPlant. What a name. So what iExplorer will do, and it's Mac or PC, and you could try before you buy, it, besides getting your music off of your iPod and stuff like that, it will let you export iPhone text messages. So you don't have to transcribe them. You can actually, what it'll do is it'll allow you to export it to PDF. You can export all the images. Then you'll have this nice long, it won't be 6 gigs, I promise. Nice long PDF with all of the text messages. Is this your boyfriend you're saving them from? Your fiance? Yeah. Yeah.
Busted.
Yeah.
Well, we live across the country from each other over 2 years. And so, and I write, and I think I might actually write a book about, because we knew each other when we were little. I was in his mother's Girl Scout troop, and I met up with him 30 years later, and we've had this whole romance that's been going on, and we're going to get married and all that. But
the text messages alone could be the spine of the whole point of a book. You know, there've been books of love letters and stuff. That'd be perfect.
Well, yeah. I mean, with a little editing, but.
Oh, yeah. No, and leave the sexy messages in. That's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. And, you know, you could make a nice romantic Valentine's book, some pictures in there. Give it to, instead of a Surface tablet, you could give him something romantic. That's nice. I like it.
Yeah, well, it'll be a lot of work to put that into a book form. And on top of that, my daughter starts sending me little video messages from my granddaughter. Yeah. So this whole different, you know, realm. And I don't have the heart to erase anything. And I listen to you all the time, and I've, you know, of course, I've never called, and all of a sudden, like, why aren't you asking somebody who can give you an answer? And I'm so excited you gave me an answer.
Yay!
I talked to lots of people who had no idea how to do this.
Yeah, microplant.com. iExplorer is actually a very handy program for saving voicemails, saving text messages, and saving your music. Apple doesn't give you an easy interface to this stuff, so this is the way to do it.
Well, I wrote it down. I totally appreciate it. And a cool thing, too, about calling is when you wait and you just listen and you're listening and doing things, you stop being nervous. So I'm really happy about that, too.
Hey, that's wonderful. Terry, it's very nice to meet you. What a romantic story. I love it. And I hope you make a book out of it. And it starts with the text messages.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
It's the modern You've Got Mail or Sleep Is in Seattle, right? It's all text messages, right? It's very romantic.
It's all text messages. Yeah. Absolutely. They're priceless.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It won't be that big. It'll be a lot smaller. Help me with this, Heather. Give me the aw sound. Aw. Right? Am I right? Aw. All right. Thank you, Terry.
thank Heather, too. She was totally cool.
Isn't she great? I'm sure she appreciated this as well.
Well, I didn't tell her the story, but she just got me back through again because I waited to chat with you yesterday. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad we had a successful outcome. Aw. Thanks, Terry.
Bye.
Yeah, bye. I love that.
Aw.
Oh, you see, you do it quicker. It's not aw. It's aw.
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 I think that's how OMG Chad says it. Which we all want to be him, right?
Yeah, he's somebody who works with us with bright red hair. And he's the king of aw. He really do it beautifully. Yeah, iExplorer. This is actually something I recently discovered. It's been around before, but I just found it myself. And it answers a lot of the questions we get about how do I get stuff off my iPod or my iPhone? Windows or Mac, iOS 7. What a great way to save all your messages or your voicemails. A lot of people have voicemails sitting on their phone they don't want to lose. I'm telling you, the whole book could be like a multimedia book with the voice messages. You make it up a little bit.
For sure. And obviously there's some photos that went back and forth as well. So the timeliness or the timeline could be really something.
What is the, is there a smiley face for aw?
I don't know.
We have to come up with one. An emoticon, they call those, right? Aw.
It might kind of look like Ashley's face, like, aw.
Matthew in Wrightwood, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. What's been going on is
hold on a second. I'm sorry. We're going to have to take a break. I hear the music. But hang on. You will be right after the break. The very first call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now, where were we? I was talking to Dave in, Matthew in Wrightwood. Dave, you're next. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Leo.
All right. I'm sorry. I cut you off there.
No problem. No worries. I just left the analog world to the digital world, and I bought a Samsung Plasma 3D TV with the surround sound and the DVD and the Blu-ray, and everything works great. I have everything hooked up with HDMI, and the TV and the surround sound say that they can communicate back and forth, so when I'm watching regular TV, I can use the speakers through the surround sound.
Right.
Through the HDMI.
Right.
Well, it's not working. And then I do some more research, and it says that you have to have a special kind of HDMI.
Yeah, you have to have the, sometimes it's the ARC, audio return channel. It'll be designated on the side of the TV, and it may not be HDMI 1. I don't know why it should be, because that's the first place you plug it in. But
right.
Often it's 2, 3, or 4. So do you have that? Have you looked and do you see it?
No, I haven't gone back and behind.
Yeah, it's just it's a brand new Samsung, so for sure we'll have it. Samsung calls it. They have some bogus name like AnyLink or something like that, but it should say ARC on it.
So you don't have to have a special HDMI cable.
No. It's a regular cable.
Okay, so it's not. Well, it doesn't have like
the cable. You know, the cable it came with should work.
Well, it didn't come with a cable.
I hate it when they do that because those are expensive cables and they don't include them. It's like, come on, dude, I'm gonna need a cable here.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So, okay, you know what it is? It's an opportunity for the salesman at the stereo store to upsell you.
Right.
With monster cables, it costs $150. Get the cheapest HDMI cable you can. It's not the cable.
I did.
The cables are all the same. So just, I think it's port 2 on a Samsung. It's not the first HDMI. It's the second HDMI, but it should say ARC on it.
Now, that should be port 2 for the surround sound system, right?
No. It's on the TV, the HDMI 2 on the TV.
But that goes from the HDMI 2 to the surround sound system,
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I have. That's the way I have it.
Same way it's hooked up that you can watch the TV. It'll come back down that same channel.
Okay.
As long as everything supports it.
Now, the other thing.
Which it should, because it's all you got. You were smart enough to get it all from one manufacturer. Shouldn't be any issue. Yeah.
And that's why I did that.
Yes. Smart man.
The other thing was I'm looking and it has something else that says optical digital audio cable.
Yeah.
Will that work too if I buy one of those cables?
Oh yeah, that's another way to do it. Sometimes because it's not on the same channel, there are lip sync issues, but usually there's a setting buried deep within the menu that can fix the lip sync if that becomes an issue. But yeah, that's a very common way to do it. So your video and audio are coming out of the DVD player into the TV.
Uh-huh.
And if you, that's the normal thing. And of course, the video and audio can be split and the 5 run surround sound will play it. If the TV, if you're using the Samsung's internet access and you're playing, let's say, a Netflix video on the TV, that can send that audio back down through the HDMI into the surround sound box. It's the same place and everything, and it'll play it. Or the TV is always sending it out through optical, or there may be a menu setting on the TV that says send audio out optical, but that's another
along
way to do it.
Along with the other 10,000 settings that's on.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's not any better to use optical. It's the same. It's digital in both cases. So if you just plug it into port 2, I think it'll all work.
Okay. Well, that's what I'll give her a try.
All right.
I appreciate it.
An optical is often a choice that people use as well. Somebody's saying you need at least HDMI 1.4. That may be the case, but I don't think you can buy. You'd be hard pressed to buy an out of date HDMI cable. I think Richard in Grand Rapids, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hello,
Richard.
First call for help. That's how far back we go.
Oh man, call for help. Yeah.
Remember
my old
processor board with Pentium 2s. That's how far back you and I go, dude.
That was my old TV show on Tech TV, started in 1998.
Yeah.
And ironically, pretty much doing the same thing today.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. You're needed.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, based on your TV show, I've been running, because I still make my own computers, Gibson Researches Shields Up.
Yes.
And I ran it. I just got a brand new, kind of a brand new computer. And everything came back stealth on the
Good man.
On the port, internet ports, it all came back stealth.
Yeah.
Then I installed iTunes, and three ports come back closed.
Yeah.
And what is it? It's, I got it in front of me here, DCOM Service Control Manager. That's one of them, port 135. And port 139, NetBIOS session.
Yeah, those are the, those ports are used not by iTunes. They were used by Windows. In fact, it's the reason Steve wrote Shields up, is he discovered that a lot of Windows 95 machines, that's how old this is, were running NetBIOS file sharing unprotected. So if you could see them on the internet, you could just go in there and see what files they had, and you could take them. So he wrote Shields up specifically for ports 135 and 139. Here's the thing. Closed is okay. What you don't want to see is open. Open means that it's open for service. Come on in. Closed means a hacker knocks, and the computer or the router in this case says, nope. That service is not available.
Yeah.
Now, the reason Steve prefers stealth, and Steve kind of invented this whole thing.
Yeah.
The reason he prefers stealth is because a hacker is looking for computers on the internet and will test all the ports. If it doesn't, if the ports are stealthed, the router gives no response. The hacker gets no information. It doesn't. He doesn't even know. He can safely assume there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets a closed, if the computer says nope, I won't do it. Then at least the hacker got some information. He says, ah, I found a computer.
Ah, okay.
So that's you're still safe.
Yeah.
You could probably go in and stealth those ports if you want. Steve explains how to do that. I don't know why iTunes would have changed that. It shouldn't have.
Well, I ran it first, and it came back all green. And then all of a sudden, I ran it. Whoa! It says close. And what?
Yeah. You know, one thing I would do is turn off something called Universal Plug and Play on your router, UPnP.
Okay.
This is something that Microsoft invented, and it's useful in some cases. For instance, if you have an Xbox, which is, I think, the reason Microsoft invented this. The Xbox can all by itself open up the ports it needs to allow somebody to initiate a game.
Okay.
So that's convenient, but that's dangerous because, yeah, the Xbox is safe. But what if bad guys get software on your network that does the same thing, opens up ports and says, hey, come on in. The water's fine. You don't want that stealth port opening going on. So that's UPnP. If you're not using an Xbox, I would turn it off.
I bet you that
will keep the router from turning those ports, changing those ports at all.
Okie doke.
Well, all right.
I'll give it a shot.
Thanks, Richard.
Well, thank you. Nice. You kept it interesting.
Nice to talk to you once again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Philip in San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello?
Hey, Philip. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. So good to talk to you. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to be getting this rain.
Isn't it? So here in California, where we've had beautiful, perfect weather, in some cases 80-degree days, while the rest of the country's freezing and snowing, we finally got some rain, which we much needed. So the drought is, let's hope, coming to an end.
Hope so. Yeah. Anyways, I have about 7 to 8 terabytes worth of external hard drives. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm running XBMC. I love movies, all kinds of media. I want to make the jump to a NAS system, and I just don't know where to start.
Yeah, that's going to be, for what you're doing, a good idea. A NAS is a network attached storage. It's basically a computer without a keyboard, mouse, or monitor, big hard drives, centralized. It's on the network, available to all the computers. And for you, because you're running a media server, it's a way of sharing your media files. I'll talk about a NAS and how to set one up when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the day, last segment of the week. Valentine's Day coming up in just a few short days. While it is a lovely thing to give your girl a tablet, I don't know if it trumps roses or chocolates. Especially a Windows tablet. Doesn't seem... it's better than a vacuum cleaner, but I don't know. Maybe a tablet and chocolates.
A tablet with a really hunky picture of yourself on it.
Oh, sure.
As the screensaver.
Dave in Chatsworth, California. Leo,
yeah.
Tech guy. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I didn't know this was going to mix into your show so well, but Documents to Go and my Zire in 2003.
Could copy
a row and column or rectangle in a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet and paste it. Windows Phone 8, apparently their Excel cannot. I don't know.
I know. Do they have copy and paste? Finally, I think they do, yeah. It took them a little while.
Microsoft Go is a great program. It's the only program I regularly paid $50 a year to update, okay?
And, you know, you'd think that the Microsoft phone would do this.
Right, and the reason I wanted to go to Microsoft is I don't like Google's You Ain't Got No Privacy policy.
Ironically, though, Google will let you paste into a spreadsheet.
Oh, no, but they'll also sell me to everyone they can.
Yeah.
Okay. Microsoft is selling privacy.
Yeah.
Google is selling me.
For reasons I don't fully understand, they seem to be selling privacy. But
I'm wondering about CyanogenMod.
No, there's no mod for. There's nothing you can do. You have a Lumia or a Microsoft Windows phone. You're stuck with it.
No. I have a dying Thunderbolt.
Oh.
I can't even dial. Okay, and I'm looking for a placement that's not going to spy on me. And I thought, okay,
CyanogenMod. I don't know how you would know whether something is spying on you or not.
Well, you know, because Google's privacy policy says we're going to read your logs and read whatever is in your phone and sell it.
So you're going to use a ROM maybe created by a hacker that you don't know? And
I know.
I can't help you on that. I can't. Who knows what the... I trust Google, so you're asking the wrong guy. But if you don't trust Google, I don't know why you would trust CyanogenMod.
That's why I'm calling you. I've heard that it's doesn't do that stuff, and it doesn't collect things, and it's...
Well, but who knows?
I know. It's supposedly open source, but I'm not going to be recompiling it, so... And so I thought, okay, that's why I was looking at Microsoft. I looked at a 928, hoping... I've been waiting 3.5 months for the...
I don't know why people think Microsoft doesn't spy on you. Why do you think Microsoft doesn't spy on you? Do you think they don't spy on you?
Yep.
Whatever that means, spy on you. I mean, Google is, it's not like you have people at Google who are sitting there going, gee, I wonder what Dave's up to.
Well, I got a phone number off of somebody, and before I went to call her, her picture was on my phone. Google says, we'll share your information with anybody who has your phone number.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. If you're using a smartphone, somebody is spying on you. Pretty much guaranteed. And while Microsoft would love... it always makes me suspicious when a company says, oh, Google's spying on you, we're not. That makes me suspicious. I think Apple is the most likely company not to be spying on you. But I don't think there's any guarantee that any of them... And by the way, what is spying on you? They're not spying on you. Maybe they're using information in your account to sell, to put ads up, as Facebook does, as Google does. And by the way... as Microsoft does, as Apple does. I don't think anybody's actually following you around, Dave. I really don't. Hey, I forgot. We had a question about network attached storage. Who was that? Is he still on? Oh, I bet he thought I hung up on him. All right, so let's talk about it. The idea is this fella had 7 or 8 terabytes, wow, of movies, music. He wanted to have a centralized server, storage server. The best way to do it is with a network-attached storage. It's a very, very big hard drive that you put in a closet somewhere because it doesn't have a keyboard, mouse, or monitor. You control it via your web browser on any one of the other computers on the network. There are a lot of companies that make these. Synology is my favorite, Synology. They're very easy to use. They have a variety of them, 2-disc, 4-disc, and more. The more disks, the more redundancy, the more capacity. So I generally recommend 4-disc NAS products as opposed to 2. And if you have 8 terabytes, you're going to need at least 4. You probably want more. Another company that makes good ones, Netgear's ReadyNAS. I've used those for years. Love them. You can even build your own with an old computer and an operating system called FreeNAS. And all of these will do the same thing. They'll run media server software. So it appears to be a Windows box or an iTunes or something similar running in the background. And that means your computer can see it, can play the video or play the audio. Great way to do it. He uses XBMC. I like Plex. It's based on XBMC, a little bit more capable. But there's lots of good choices out there. Dave in Roseburg, Oregon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I've got a Windows 8 on an Envy laptop.
Okay.
And I upgraded to 8.1, and I'm using, let's see, I can't find it, but, oh, it's Viper.
Antivirus, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and what's going on is it's conflicting somehow with my Windows firewall. I go back and configure my firewall, and, you know, I get that that thing down in my toolbar on the bottom, the question mark with a exclamation, and when you open it up, it says you have a problem with your firewall, and I go check, and my firewall's off again.
Yeah, generally, security software doesn't like firewalls or is incompatible with. You see problems with security software all the time of this sort. I would guess that the Viper product you're using has its own firewall. Is that the case?
It has what implies it's a firewall.
Yeah, so that would make sense that they would then disable Windows firewall. So it's a question of do you like Viper? Is it doing the job you want? Is the firewall, do you trust it? Then let it disable Windows firewall because it's incompatible. You only need one running. I generally I think the Windows firewall is excellent. I think you use that with you have Windows 8, so you have Windows Defender built in. You probably on Windows 8 don't need a third party antivirus like Viper because Microsoft has really kind of locked it down. But if you want to keep Viper and you don't mind using the Viper firewall, I would just let it disable the Windows firewall and continue on. It's fine. The other option, I guess, which might be a little more complicated, is removing the firewall component from Viper, turning it off. If you configure that out in the configuration, then it probably won't disable Windows firewall. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks to all of you for listening. I think maybe next week I want to talk about privacy in Google because this last caller rattled me a little bit. The idea that Google's spying on you, I can't use anything Google because it's spying on you. Interesting contention. One which I disagree with. Of course, there's no way to know for sure. And if you're using software that's not open source, if you're using hardware like a smartphone, you're opening it up. It's a perfect spy device. It's got a microphone. It's got a camera. It knows where you all are at all times. I think this issue of privacy, of trust, of who's spying on whom and how do you know is a great one. We'll save that for next week. How about it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and Mac Break Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.